Reason for that to feel the pressure. But I don't want to make it extra. I can show my mother making a gesture. I can like an oven on pressure. Every single day I feel the pressure.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to That One Studio. It's your boy C-Rock here on the What Are You Made Of show. Great guest today for you all. Wait till you get to meet Marley and find out what she's into and what she's made of. You guys are going to love this. I know a lot of people out there are trying to accomplish some of the stuff that she's accomplished. And, you know, she's not done yet, by the way. But you're going to get to hear some behind the scenes and the things that she's gone through. But before I do that, I just want to thank everyone for your listenership, for your support of myself, my brand, the What Are You Made Of show. Means the world to me that people are out there that, you know, just show up, and feedback is important. Even the bad feedback, like I would call constructive criticism. I love it. I welcome more of it. So I want to thank you. And also thatonemerch.com. You can go to thatonemerch.com to get hats, t-shirts, and hoodies. If you're that one and you want to represent being that one, go get your merch, thatonemerch.com. All right. Today in the house is Marley Jacks. She's an award-winning filmmaker and globally recognized expert in video creation, YouTube growth, and content strategy. She's not a YouTube coach, folks. She's the YouTube coach. Redefining the landscape of video content with her innovative 1% content creation approach. She's very disruptive technology that she's come up with here. And thing is that I start to see you like promoted to speak at different events. Like there's a coaching con or something like that going on in Orlando coming up. I saw that. And you know, you're getting a lot of attention now, and I don't know if you really originally set out to want that or if it was business. We're going to find that out. But Marley, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm that one. I love it.
Let's go. Let's go. You definitely are. You definitely fit the mold. Mm-hmm. That one, you know, is all about the ingredient. I mean, finding out who you are, right? Knowing the ingredients of you and really peeling back those layers and identifying with who you are versus what you do and then leaning into it unapologetically. And you do definitely fit that mold. So let's kick this show off the right way. And that is with the question, what are you made of?
Well, last I checked, it's like, what, 70, 80% water?
No, that's true. That's true. That is true.
Yeah.
But like figuratively speaking.
Figuratively speaking. I mean, I think I'm made of commitment. That's a really strong value for me. That commitment doesn't care how you feel. It's if you committed to this, if this is what you're going after, you do it. I think I'm made of a lot of creativity, and I'm always pushing those boundaries of creativity, because I think when you push your limits expand. And that's kind of something that I've been obsessed with. And I'll say obsessed is another word of the ingredients that make me who I am, that when I want something or when I'm going after something, it's something that I have a healthy obsession over, because I know that I can do whatever it takes and that I have all the evidence that I've done in the past and will continue to for the rest of my life, because that's who I am.
Love it. I got to ask you this question. We all have content, us content creators, old content, right? That's been out there for a while. And then you look at, and I don't know if you've ever done this, but have you ever looked at the transformation that you've made from the beginning all the way through?
Yeah. For now? Yeah. And I feel like I get this amnesia that as soon as I go on to a new level of content, like the stuff I made a month ago, I'm like, oh, that's old Marley. That's old Kanye. Like it's old stuff now, but man, you know what? I should go back to the very first video on my YouTube channel. And I know that I didn't know where to place the camera, so it looks like my eyes are closed and that I was trying to, trying to be super creative in terms of the editing, that really like it was more the message that was said that I should have focused the creativity on instead. But it's a really good experience to go through and see how far you've come instead of, oh, I'm not here yet, not looking at the gap.
That's the biggest thing for me, is that when I first listened to like some of the old content, the old shows, and then I listen now and I'm like, holy cow, like I have really come, I was so proud of myself, because I think we're hard on ourselves a lot, right? Like you just said, focusing on where we're not yet, right? But like, we always want to move faster, go further. We're comparing ourselves to others. We have this vision in our head of what we should be doing and what we should be accomplished. And we don't really take that time to see how far we've come.
Yeah.
And so, like, go ahead.
I was going to say, you think about where you were like 10 years ago. 10 years ago, I was just graduating school as a dental hygienist. Okay. I was nowhere near what, I didn't even know what it meant to be an entrepreneur. I think I was making $40,000 a year. And like, I thought that being able to make $100,000 a year was like the ultimate dream. If I could do that, then life would just be smooth sailing.
And how many teeth have you looked at recently?
Just my own. I don't know. Yeah, I have not. I left dental in 2016, 2017. So it's been a while.
Yeah. I figured that. And so what I want to talk about, where did you come from? Like, everybody's got a story. Can you give us like a little bit of a backstory of where you came from and what it was like as a kid? And, you know, some people tell us content creators that we're just like attention seekers. Like, was there something in you that was, or something that happened that caused you to crave attention? Attention's good, by the way. I'm not, you know, banging on attention. Attention's necessary, but just curious.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what we are as content creators, as entrepreneurs. We are acquiring attention. In nature, anything without attention dies. So it's a good thing. And I think if people have an aversion to it or feel like they have to prove, have a good reason for why they want attention, that's going to hold you back more than anything, is that false belief. So when I was a kid, my dream was to grow up and make movies in Hollywood. I was obsessed with Disney movies, of course, to start, and then started to watch my heroes. One of my first celebrities that I just loved to watch her was Sandra Bullock. Like, when I was young, I used to tell people that Sandra Bullock was my mom. My mom wasn't too happy about that. I don't know where that came from, but I was like, I want to make movies in Hollywood. And I was told, no, you can't. Not many people get to do that. And it's a really hard life. And you know, most people don't make it, which might be true, but still, to have that as a, you know, kind of a shutdown early when you're like, when you have this dream, that's like, wouldn't that be amazing? And so I fought against it, but I also had this side of me that believed it. And so growing up, I would still, you know, I would do acting and singing, and I was in the high school plays and stuff like that. But I think there was still that part of me that didn't like fully feel like I had permission to do it. And I went into dental hygiene because I knew that it was going to be a good, solid career that could make good money while I was figuring out what I really wanted to be when I grew up. But even in school, like when I was in dental hygiene school, when the girls are like, we were in 12 classes at a time, plus working in a clinic, like a lot of stress. I was working at a radio station on the side. I was also taking acting lessons and auditions and stuff like that. And I had it on the side. Did dental for a few years, but really was like, this is, how creative can you be cleaning teeth every day? I'm a very creative person. So I started a little side social media business. And then that turned into a YouTube agency, which, look, I'm kind of like making movies on the internet for entrepreneurs, like the best stories.
The right kind of movies on the internet. So clear.
Yeah. And I don't know, then just I went through a pretty rough divorce. And after my divorce was like, why am I holding back what I really want? Like, why am I trying to live for other people or not admit to myself what my dreams really are? And, you know, got into a different environment, surrounded myself with new people that encourage like, hey, you've got a dream that's in you for a reason. And last year I made my first documentary. It's won some awards at film festivals. I'm doing auditions and, but more importantly, like my business, I'm making movies for entrepreneurs, and whether that's, you know, their social media content or the entrepreneurs that want to make, we call them documentary publicity stunts. Like, I'm living my dream, and also in a way that that there's so much more ahead of me to continue to accomplish. But I've now admitted to myself what I'm made of, what I want to do.
Yeah, I love it. So, you know, you mentioned something like waiting for somebody to give you permission, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. What is that? Like, I think there's like this thing where everybody feels like they need a license to do their dreams, life license, you know, like a certification to chase your dreams or approval from someone. And do you notice that? Like, overall, like there's an overarching force of that or something.
Yeah. Well, and I think that now that I've kind of on the other side of it, not to say that like, oh, my dreams have come true and I've made it and it's over. Like, the having of a dream is what makes life worth living. And I think that the negative pressures around you that can kind of pull you away from it. I mean, I don't know if you necessarily have to say that it's like anything evil. I know, you know, religious people might say like, well, that's Satan that's pulling you down. But also, I think that there's a really powerful lesson in it, that when you are tested to go after your dream, it really makes you admit to yourself how much you really believe in it and how much you're going to go after it. Like, do you have this dream in you for a reason? Are you going to realize it? Or is that like that? Because that's the first challenge of overcoming any obstacle, which the first obstacle is how much you believe in it, no matter what anyone else says.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to share something with you and the audience here. Like, I have one big bill that comes due every month, right? It's a credit card bill. It's got business expense, everything else, right? And I always look at it and I'm like, holy shit, how did it get that high? And then every like, look, we could have the best month ever. Like we could have a month where we have plenty of money, right? And I'm always at that like 2 days before it's due, and then a day after it, like that 4 day window, I'm like, do I really want to do this? Like it feels like it goes out faster than it comes in. And I have this conversation. I think it's like I got to go through therapy with myself, but when I do this, the point of this is that I think that when I'm going through that, I'm thinking to myself too, like, how bad do you want it? And it's a test. Like, this is like every opportunity that I have to show my faith in what I'm doing and the commitment and the energy I'm going to be putting behind it. I have to pass that test every time.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and can I offer you a reframe?
Like, oh, sure. Sure. I'll take, by the way, I reframe stuff all the time for myself, mm-hmm. but it's good to hear it from someone else.
Yeah. So for me, when I get an invoice from someone that I work with, like if I hire a funnel builder or a copywriter or whatever, I pay that thing so fast. Like I want to have a reputation that I pay my invoices fast because I love the people that I work with. I only work with A players. And I also want the reputation that like if I need something, they know Marley always pays me. She pays me quickly. She respects my talent. And I love to pay them. And I want people to love to pay me too. And so when I pay those bills or when I pay my credit card, it's like, I get to pay this because I create money so that I can create more. I definitely had false beliefs around like, well, if I love my work that I do, if it's not hard, I shouldn't be making too much money for it, which is totally false. Like you will be paid in proportion to your mastery. And so that was a false belief that I had to work through. And the way that I combat that with is like, I love to pay people. And as a result, people love to pay me. And also that, if it's easy, that means that I've achieved mastery and I will be paid in proportion to my mastery.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. Look at it. Yeah. I pay people right away too, but it goes on the Amex, right?
Of course.
For the points. And then I'm like, Amex, you sons of, no, it's not their problem. No, I'm just telling you what I go through. Cause it's like, But again, it's testing that commitment. And again, every day I wake up, man, I'm thankful for the opportunity to impact people. Like that is like such an honor and a privilege to be able to wake up and be able to pour into people and help people. And, you know, whether it's YouTube or podcasting or whatever. So when you did your documentary recently, are you talking about the stunt documentary? That's the one?
Yeah, the cancel culture documentary. Yeah, we did quite the publicity stunt with that one.
Yeah. So you can, if you don't mind sharing about that, but before you do, I want to know like what led up to you coming up with the idea and then going ahead and executing on it because you could have did it before. You didn't do it until then. Right. So like, and then you're glad you did. Right. So can you take us through that, what it's about and then why you decided finally to take action on something like that?
Yeah. And it was quite risky. Like when we were going through it, it was like, this could go, it's a documentary on cancel culture. And instead of it being a documentary where it's like, well, let me tell you the stories and here's what happens in cancel culture and here's people that have been affected, we made it a social experiment that was an experiment to get myself canceled, to actually demonstrate what happens. And it worked. I don't know if I should give it away because if people go watch it, it's on my YouTube channel and there's a very big plot twist at the end. You got to see.
Yeah, don't give it away. Just like what the premise was, right? Yeah.
It was really cool because it's, you know, it's won a couple awards at film festivals and to be in a theater and watch people watch it and to get to that plot twist moment, like the whole theater goes wild, like, oh my God, it's the coolest experience ever. Like it's one thing to get likes and comments online, but to be in a theater of people watching, it was really cool. But so the reason why we came to it was I previously had been putting out like 3 to 5 videos on YouTube a week. And as a content expert, of course, people are going to look at the numbers of like, you know, how many followers do you have? And followers are an arbitrary number. We have clients with small followings that are making 7 figures with their specific niche audience, and they're just crushing it. But as a content expert, I'm like, first of all, it's a challenge for myself. And also, you know, the credibility of, can I get to 100,000 subscribers? And so I was like, doing everything I could, trying everything new, which really in general, like people should be trying new things. It's not a matter of if it will happen. It's a matter of if you will keep at it until it does. And so I'm trying new things and putting out 3 to 5 videos a week. And I was like, you know, only 1% of YouTube channels ever get to 100,000 subscribers. That one. Am I going to do what everyone else is doing? The 99%? Or if only 1% does this, how do I do something that is completely what 99% are not willing to do? And so that's where we started ideating, like, what's the kind of content that I would be, you know, it's not just me doing talking head and like sharing 3 tips about XYZ. It's something that's going to be like disruptive. And that's our whole content ecosystem is disruptive content. And so we came up with, okay, well, what if we first, you know, I want to make movies in Hollywood. What if I make Hollywood movies on YouTube? What if we talk about content that is already, you know, maybe potentially controversial? There's already noise existing that we can ride that noise and create our own opinion on it, or even, and even more so, to put ourselves at the epicenter of it. And this was like, you know, when I talk about disruptive content, the biggest thing that people will respond with is like, well, what if I get canceled for being disruptive? And when I say disruptive, it doesn't mean that you have to be like offensive, although people will always be offended by something that you have to say if they don't agree with it. So what does it matter? Like, do speak to your truth anyway. And you think about the most disruptive people that have changed history, like Jesus, Gandhi, Mother Teresa, Martin Luther King, like, be disruptive. Take a stand for something that you believe in, or share an opinion, even if people are pissed off about it, even if people unfollow you for it. Why are people so afraid of the unfollow? Like, you are too much of a follower if you will not take your own stand and create an audience that has a message that they can follow. So, yeah, we came up with the idea of, instead of being afraid of disruptive content, like making an example of cancel culture and putting ourselves at the center of cancel culture. And I got myself canceled and it worked, and people hated it. People loved it. The people who loved it are talking about it still. The people who hated it still are too. And we actually just recently submitted it for an Emmy Award. So we're putting it up there to see if it's worthy of being nominated there, because we've won a few, you know, awards at film festivals. So it's, you know, for the first documentary, I feel like we did a really good job with it.
Yeah, I liked it. I watched it. And, you know, I'm not going to give anything away, but how can I do this without giving anything away? I want to ask you the question about, let's just say when somebody's watching a movie or reality show, and there is, like, you already talked about a plot twist. So people feel like they get fooled. Let's put it that way. Like, and do you ever notice, like, that I've seen this multiple times, and they get really pissed that they themselves got tricked or fooled, even though there was nothing, no monetary, no, nothing got taken advantage of. It's just their ego or something got, like, and then they're like pissed at you.
The thing is, like, we can't take responsibility for other people's triggers, which is part of the message about cancel culture, that people will jump to conclusions. There's this disgusting thought virus that will spread when people are negative and you just jump on top of it. But the cool thing that is also pointed out in this as a demonstration is, like, the media is doing this to you all the time. The difference is I pulled back the curtain and showed you how this was happening. So if people are going to be upset about it, that's great. This was meant to provoke strong emotional reactions to show you what's happening. And there were people that at first, when the publicity stunt was happening, were pissed. And then they watched the documentary and were like, oh, wow, I get it. I had to go through that emotional turmoil for a moment to realize the epiphany at the end.
Yeah, guys, by the way, just to know what we're talking about, if you go to Marley Jax with two X's, Marley, MarleyJaxx on YouTube, go check it out. It's on there. And also her Instagram's on there as well. I'm not ending the show. I just want to get that out now before I forget. And then, so look, I care about people too, not just what people do. I talked about this before. It's like who you are, right? And I'd love to know, and again, we can go deep as this as you're willing to and as vulnerable as you want to, but like relationship, right? You brought up the word difficult when you talked about the divorce, right? So talking about Marley Jax, who you are versus what you do, why, I guess, what could you share about your relationship and what you learned from the experience and taking responsibility too on your end? Because a lot of times, like, when relationships go, it's always like, that son of a, or whatever. By the way, I grew up in a broken home. My mom was married three times. I live, you know, step parents, all the fighting, everything like that went on. And it was never a smooth transition in our world. But like, the parts for you and who have you become since then?
Yeah. So I got married after I had been in a string of relationships that always cheated on me. And so I was looking for someone that I could feel really safe with. And as a result, I think I found someone that, I mean, we still weren't the right fit for each other. It was very different than any man that I dated before. But, you know, at the end of the relationship, when we realized, like, hey, we didn't pick the same lifestyles that we both want. When we first got married, I was a dental hygienist. And then along the way, I found entrepreneurship, and that was like a different lifestyle than what he signed up for. And so ultimately, like, he wanted a wife that was going to have dinner ready on the table for him after he had a hard day of work and be a housewife. And I was just like, that's not what I want, and not what he wanted either. But also throughout the relationship, and I've never actually like worded it in this way. I'm kind of like saying it and processing it out loud for the first time. At the end of the relationship, you know, when things are heated and tense and you're going through divorce and you're kind of in survival over like what's mine and what's yours and how am I going to move on in this, like people can lash out. And I was certainly called names and, you know, told that I was manipulative. And I realized recently that I was, that I, when I first met him, wanted so desperately to be safe that I found someone that I felt like I could change who I was and change who he was to give me that safety, and that I would do anything to provide myself that emotional safety, because otherwise, like all the men that I dated before that had cheated on me, or, you know, my type was like narcissist, manipulator, cheater, abuser. So instead I was like, well, I will be the manipulator here to make sure that I'm getting the safety that I want. So, I mean, ultimately, like, we wanted different things and I wanted safety. And when I realized that, that I had controlled the relationship in terms of, doing whatever it took to get that safety, and then realized like I still wasn't happy in myself and that we didn't want the same things, it just, it fell apart.
And when you say safety, you're not talking about entrepreneurship part safety, because you went into entrepreneurship, but you're talking about that trust. You wanted to be able to trust, right? And have that off your plate. Like, when you don't trust, and you can trust all day long and they don't give it, you know, earn it. But like, when you don't trust, it adds something to your mind that takes up a lot of space for creativity and everything else, right?
Yeah.
Where do you think that attraction to narcissism came from?
That's a really good question. I did a lot of therapy on that. Like, after my divorce, I was spiraling in this, like, I thought that I would never be loved again. I thought that I wasn't worthy. I would try to look at my accomplishments and be like, logically, you know, I've done good things in my life, but like, I didn't emotionally feel good about myself. And now I obviously see how I was looking at the external, like, look at my business, look at the money, look at the relationships I have, thinking that that's what made me valuable. And so I did a lot of therapy to find, like, where is this unworthiness coming from, that I just fear this inside me. And I did MDMA therapy, which, like, huge fan of. I know that it's still, you know, being regulated, but the research on it, I mean, them one session for veterans who have decades of PTSD is just like, it's like 5 years of therapy healing them so much. So for me, I was in a place of like desperation. I was going to just regular talk therapy, EMDR, 3 times a week, looping over the same things. Like, why am I not lovable? I'll never be loved again. I can't get out of this. I don't know like what I have to live for, how I'm ever going to be happy again. And a friend of mine was like, why don't you come do MDMA therapy? Which for me, I was like, drugs are bad. Like, what? I've never done this.
Oh, but by the way, I did MDMA therapy too, but the therapist was never there and I didn't take the right dosage. No. I'm just saying, back in college, I wrote in my book, so this is out. I'm not proud of it, but, you know, anyway.
I don't know if it
might have helped. So I don't know. But anyway, maybe, sorry.
Chemically, like, it dumps your serotonin and you just fall in love and euphoria, reduces the amygdala.
When you go through therapy that way, is the dosage high enough where you get that kind of feeling? Because it was it was an intense feeling. I mean, it's a...
like, it is all love. And so then it also allows you to look at your life, your history with a whole new level of compassion. So what came up for me, and like, I don't know if I ever would have gotten this in weeks, months of just talk therapy. I was able to look at the pattern of relationships I had in my life. And it was like, you know, cheating boyfriends, controlling bosses, even mean girls in high school. And then it was like, you know, typically, like, where did this start in your childhood? And I found this memory came up in my mind of my mom. My mom went through a postpartum depression after a miscarriage. And as a child, like, I internalized that as something wrong with me. And I have to work really hard to, like, make my mom happy. And my mom was like super mom. She worked full time. Plus, she made all of our Halloween costumes from scratch and cooked every meal and did all the house cleaning, all by, like, to a high standard. And I just internalized my working mother with high quality wanting to give us this incredible life as I have to work really hard to get my mom's approval, which was not true. I just misinterpreted it as a child feeling like, mm-hmm. you know, my mom's depressed. And I remember one time my mom crying and feeling like I did something bad. And now knowing later, like she was going through postpartum depression. She just lost a baby at 3 years old, 4 years old. I didn't know that. Like yep. I'm her entire world for all I know. But that one experience is what set off the chain reaction that I was able to work on in my 30s.
You know, it's a decision that you made as a 3 year old or a 4 year old, which is wild that we're still being controlled by decisions that we made when we were young.
Yeah,
you know, it's just crazy. So how did you
consciously remember? Like, who knows what memories happened or like that one thing that maybe a kid on the playground said to you that is still in your programming, even though you don't remember it.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy. 100%. You said that one a bunch of times through that whole thing, though, by the way, just so you know. I know, it's just awesome. So I'm very good at branding, just so you know. So how do you keep the MDMA like from being something like, oh, I got to go back to that again? What I'm saying is that when I was doing it as recreational, right, in college back in the day, right, and partying and all that, it was because, man, that feels so good. Like, I'd do it again. Like, it's always the opportunity to go back and do that. And then your regular life doesn't ever seem as good. This is where it got real dark for me when I was in my early 20s, is that I realized like, this is not doing it anymore. It's like dark. And now I feel like I have to do it. So I had to break free. And I just decided I didn't have to do anything, but like, how do you keep from going back? And then that's the only time you feel that good. You know what I mean?
I think it's important if anyone's going to do psychedelic therapy of any kind that you have to have integration, that it's not just, oh, I'm going to, cause that's like, that's bypassing. That's thinking you're doing the work, but really you're getting high on the weekends. Like that's not actually leading
to cover up
life. Yeah. So for me, like before, and if you're doing it right, you should do it with a facilitator or a therapist or a nurse that is going to work with you before, during, and after. So before I even show up for the session is like, what are we going to work on so that I can, you know, they're facilitating the journey. And then after that, it's not like you had this incredible, it's like sometimes how people will go to like a Tony Robbins or some kind of big event and they're like all hyped up and like, this is amazing. And then like the next week, they're like, they go back to their regular life. Mm-hmm. I think that it's actually so important that if you're going to do some kind of therapy and whether it's psychedelic or anything, just that, sure, you might get these epiphanies in the conversation with the therapist when you're in the session. But then after that, it's like, it's the days, the weeks, the months of actually changing those behaviors. Like something that I learned, you know, the thing about like my mom, my childhood, it changes how I show up in my conversations with people, with my kids, with my mom. But if I wasn't aware of that, and if I didn't have the consistency in like, in how I integrate that, then I would keep going and I would keep learning that lesson over and over. I had a shaman, I've done a few other psychedelic therapies, that said a lot of times people will come into these ceremonies or sessions and they will feel like, I got to heal this. And then I got to heal this. And I got to heal this. And they're just like obsessed with the healing, that they never move on from it. Like this, it's heal, awaken, celebrate. Like you might've healed that thing 10 ceremonies ago. At this point, it's, you know, what are you going to now do with it? You've opened this space. Now fill it with something new and healthy.
Yeah, I love it. Love it. So then going forward, you mentioned also that I'm using your words against you to create the interview. You notice that? So you mentioned something about getting with the right crowd, right? That's going to support and elevate you and all that. What kind of things did you do? Masterminds or events, or how did you like get into that for those out there that are looking to get into around to the right crowd?
Yeah. Well, I physically moved. Like I left the town I grew up in, which I think is also like, I think that there's a metaphorical beauty in that too. Like leave the town you grew up in terms of the thoughts that you grew up with or the people that you're around. And it's not that anything has to be wrong with that, but sometimes just that change of space, like even you go on a vacation, you experience new cultures and you learn new things. Like you are getting new inputs and that exposure is going to bring you to different thoughts, to different behaviors. And so for me, after my divorce, it was like, you know, we're also in the middle of the pandemic. My best friend who lives in Boise, Idaho was like, hey, come stay with us. Like, come just be with us, especially since I was alone after my divorce. And so being in a new environment and being around a friend when I was going through quite a depression and grieving, that was a great environment to be in, where like I had this friend that took me in and cooked me meals and made sure I got out of bed in the morning, but then also a different environment, like even the weather, you know, in the middle of spring when snow is still melting in Canada, I would go for bike rides and like just be in nature. And then yes, absolutely. Like masterminds, different communities of entrepreneurs. Like there's a quote that I learned early on from someone that said to me, like, if you want to make money, stand next to it. And like, you can take that to anything in your life. If you want to be healthy, stand next to it. If you want to be happier, if you want to have good relationships, stand next to it. Like, be around people that have what you want, and kind of just like osmosis or absorbing those behaviors. Some of the reasons why people don't change is because they know that they have to change their environment. Like for people that maybe they want to quit smoking, that might mean that they have to change who they hang out with, and letting go of friends might be really hard. But then also the opposite of getting into environments that are intimidating can also be really hard. Like surround yourself in a room where you feel like you're the dumbest person in that room. And that's, you know, that can suck, but it can also be like, look at the room I have to grow.
Yeah. Good point. So what's next for you? I know the Emmy, as we wind this down, the Emmy, going after the Emmy, which is huge, but what's next for you? Like if I could snap my fingers and make it happen, I was like a genie that popped out of the lamp. What does that look like? Paint that picture for us.
Yeah, I mean, definitely want to, that would be amazing to win an Emmy, and would love to continue making.
I thought you said it was going to be amazing if I was a genie and I popped out. Oh.
That would be amazing. Please do.
I'm sorry to cut you off, but I have some jokes that I think are funny. So.
Yeah, I want to keep creating incredible content that disrupts people's thoughts and patterns of behavior and thinking, and elevates, you know, consciousness, humanity, supports entrepreneurs. Because I think that I want to build the people that build the businesses that change the world. So if my content can be specifically helping entrepreneurs to grow in who they are, I want my content, I feel like last year was a big, you know, we made the documentaries, we put together the systems and the team, and now it's kind of about that creative volume that I want to be producing more frequently, and producing at a level, like a creative genius freak kind of level that people haven't seen from me before, which is going to stretch my limits, which will expand my limits.
I love it. She's going to be a freaking freak content creator, disruptor. I love it. I love it. Marley, hey, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. There's definitely something that we can collab on in the future. I don't know what it is yet, but we'll find it, because I love what you're doing. I love being a disruptor. I call it like a respectful disruptor. Is that a good term? Because I like, you can still piss people off a little bit, but like it's respectful, but it's like, whoa, and it gets attention.
Jesus was a disruptor. Mother Teresa was a disruptor.
Yeah, respectful disruptor.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, you have to go out and hurl insults at people, but you're taking a stand for something that is powerful, even if people don't like it.
Love it. All right, guys. Marley Jacks with two X's, marleyjacks.com. You can also go check her out on YouTube and Instagram. Marley, thank you for being here. I appreciate you, and continue to be that one.
Artlist.io.